Hello and welcome to the JockX podcast. This is episode 51. This is where each week I have on world-class performers and we really get into their habits, their tools, their tricks, the tips, the strategies, the principles that they live by that got them their incredible results. And us as listeners can grab a hold of these strategies, these principles, and apply them to our own game, to live them out, and whether that be in sport, whether it be in business, or whether it be just in life in general, we can get these things applied to our game and take it to the next level, and ultimately empower our greatness. And that's what we're all about. And this episode, I'm stoked to have back on the show my great friend, Tyson Popplestone. We have a huge conversation here about the aftermath, if you like, from his Everest journey in 2015, what he's doing now, some key things coming up for him in his life, and just the incredible messages that he really shares with us on this show and what he has learned in recent months, and just all around stoked to have him back on. Really enjoyed this one. I know you guys well. This week, I've got a little mission for you. Make sure you tell at least one friend. Just pick out one friend, one family member, someone you used to know maybe. Just let them know about Tyson in this episode or particularly other past episodes and just this podcast in general. That is your mission. That really helps us out and just helps those people out. This show is for them. It's for you. It's to help you take it up a level. We put on all this work and it's free and this is what it's all about. So whether you're in Europe, whether it be in the States, America, through Asia, Africa, Middle East, obviously Australia here in New Zealand. This is for you guys, a little mission for you to just let someone know, just send a message, email, text, whatever it needs to be. That's what I want you to do this week. If this is your first time listening, welcome to the show. Loving having you here. Obviously all past guests, excited to have you back. Now show notes for this, with links to Tyson's stuff, is going to be on eliteteamleadership.com.au/EP51. And obviously, guys, if you can give us 2 minutes of your time, rating and a 5-star rating on iTunes really helps us out, really keeps these guests coming on. And we have some massive guests coming up in the next few weeks as well. So really excited to get rolling into April and making these episodes come your way and help you empower your greatness. So without further ado, we get stuck into this one with Tyson Popplestone, episode 51, and myself, the host of the show, if you like, Jock. So enjoy. You here, Tyce?
Oh, very excited to be back.
It's been a while. We're episode 38, and we're coming along back into the 50s with you.
That has come up very quick. 38 was the last time, was it?
38. I think we split it over two because it was about a 2-hour conversation.
Yeah, it's a big conversation.
It was. A bit of a debrief or rundown from your Everest experience. Yeah. And obviously, we never got the chance to take part in 2016, your climb. So, yeah, tell us how you've been since then and your thoughts on Everest and how you're sitting with life come late March. We are now in 2016.
I can't believe how fast it's gone. As a start point, it feels like yesterday we were sitting down talking about the whole trip that we had planned to Everest, and I know I went over a few of the details in our last catch up, but the few months since I've been back for Everest has just been a probably big time of just refreshing for myself. I mean, it's just been nice to be able to put the feet up a little bit and just reflect on what was still an incredible journey, though it didn't really work out the way that I'd anticipated. Just this year's all about just refreshing for me, just creating a little bit of space in my life to just breathe a little bit and just sort of enjoy living rather than trying to work so hard towards anything in particular right now.
Yeah, it was interesting because you sort of came back early December and we caught up and we recorded that 2-hour episode and then you basically took nearly 2 months off, really, didn't you? Sort of recovering in a sense. You had some time off, you travelled up the coast to Northern Australia, and really sort of spent some time. How did you find that? And let's talk about from sort of practical sense, how integral was that to your recovery, to your mindset, to your outlook on life at that point, and just the real need? Because can you imagine coming back and having to work, which a lot of people have to do the following day, but you were lucky enough to have some time to yourself.
It was really good. I think it was essential for me to have that time aside. I think, like anyone, when you go through a challenge or you're striving towards a massive goal, it obviously takes up a whole heap of not just sort of physical time or whatever, but there's a lot of mental space that's just taken up with that. So I know when I got back from Everest, my mind was just shot. I was just exhausted from trying to just handle all the details, not having ever you climbed a mountain before or funded a trip like that before or had to speak to sponsors on the level that I was before. There was just a whole heap of parts of my brain that I'd never used, just absolutely on fire. So being able to come back and just put those things to the side temporarily and, as I said, just breathe, refresh, recover was super important. And lucky enough to have gone up to the coast, went up to Cairns for a couple of weeks with my wife and brother-in-law and his wife, and just did a bit of surfing and stayed at some nice places. And it was just a really amazing recovery period. It was almost like a healing period for me where I could just come back to terms with the fact that it didn't work out as I'd anticipated, but if I was completely honest, it probably worked out the best way for me. I can honestly sit here now, you know, 5 months later and say I'm glad with how it worked out, but when I first got back, that probably wasn't necessarily the case straight away.
Yeah. No, it was interesting. There's a few sort of key concepts. I think, like we sort of just mentioned, the time to sort of recover from an adventure like that and the effort that went into that, I know how much it did to get to that point, just what you got achieved. And just come to think of it, you would have been leaving probably today or actually, you would have been leaving this week.
Funny?
You would have been leaving this week to climb Everest. So has any of that thought ever popped into your head in terms of, you know, this, you know, you would have been saying goodbyes this time of year to go on the 2 month adventure to try and get to the top? And on top of that, what if you had to give me a number, a percentage, your chances in future, so you're 2029. What's the percentage of you, do you think, now, if you had to give me a number, to have a crack at climb to the top over the next 50 years?
I think as I sit right now, it's very low.
Very low,
20%. Yeah. It's something that's in the back of my mind, and I've certainly developed an appreciation for what the guys who go over and climb are going through mentally, physically, and everything like that. And but it's funny, I think I spent so many years as a middle distance runner, and to run a PB and stand on top of the podium for me was just such a pinnacle. It was such an exciting moment, and I just didn't get the same buzz standing at the summits of any of the mountains that we went on. I think I was just as happy walking through, looking up at the mountains as what I was when I stood at the top looking back down. So I think that was a really defining moment for me when I realised that, because I can't imagine myself ever committing so much time to something that really is not something I'm passionate about.
I love that bit you just mentioned about the running and on the dais and you're getting that excitement thing. I think that's really, you know, a really important thing for people sort of to be aware of with what they really enjoy and what really gets that buzz.
Yes.
Because some people, I'm just looking at a nice, your mother's lovely back garden here, we're down here actually in the country for folks out there or down for the long Easter weekend. But just sitting at the back here and looking at the garden, I'm just thinking some people probably get that high just by doing the garden. I know people get the high by just doing the gardens and that. And it could be painting a house. It could be playing soccer. It could be running, or it could be climbing Mount Everest. And I think it's cool to be sort of really aware of those, what things get you going. And as our, you know, one of our favourites, Tim Ferriss, says, you know, he doesn't do something unless he gets that hell yeah type moment. So he gets all these invitations all the time. You know, like I'm talking $100,000 speaking, engagements and a few other things. Like, but he says no to a lot of them because they don't get that hell yeah sort of feeling from him. So I think that's a cool thing. And obviously you're aware of that now that you've undertaken that preliminary training, I guess, up on the region up there in the Himalayas. So it's a cool thing.
It was a really cool thing. I mean, it seems strange when I look back to 12 months ago how much effort I was putting into something that I'd never really done before, never even knew if I loved, never really had any passion for. And I love that you brought up Tim Ferriss's hell yeah philosophy, because the fact is I don't think there'll ever come a time in my life where I commit to something at the level I did with that unless I am really all in. I think maybe my ego got in the way more than I'd like to really admit, and I told people I was doing it. I didn't want to let them down. So I think that was just a... a little bit of a definitely not a lost cause, but it was just a little bit of a lost mindset, I think, on why it was that I was doing it. So from now on, I think passion's going to dictate my big decisions to come.
Yeah. So yeah, that's cool, because I think from my view, I feel like this is going to be a sort of landmark case for you in a way, and you're going forward and deciding what to do and what not to do.
Yeah.
And I think hopefully listeners out there can sort of grab hold of some of your key learnings in terms of what to sort of passionately get involved with, and not really doing it because of other people want to give you a pat on the back, or they rub their hands together in excitement for you.
Yeah.
If at the core of it, if you're not into it fully, and that applies to a lot of things. If you're not into it, then you've really got to question whether you should be doing that.
So true. I think one of the biggest things that I'll say to anyone that I'm speaking with that's gone through disappointment is the fact that they're going to find strength through that. Maybe they don't see it right now, but I can guarantee that looking back, there's going to be some form of strength that's found in their trial. And it was a little bit of my own medicine. It was sour to taste, because I think that while I was over there, it was one of the most disappointing results I've really personally ever experienced. And I remember sitting in Nepal and just thinking about the fact that I've told so many people you're going to find strength, but I know when you're in that moment, it doesn't feel that way. So looking back now, I am so grateful, because just the clarity that it's allowed me to have in so many other areas of my life has been absolutely huge. And in terms of being able to relate with the people that I'm working with, it's certainly added so much benefit there, which is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing too, like people, you've got to try some things you aren't certain about whether they are for you or not. So you definitely, I think to an extent, I know your thoughts, but extent, you've got to try things to know whether they are for you or not.
Yeah.
And you put 12 months into it, and then you realize it probably wasn't for you in the end. So, but better, I think a lot better doing that than sitting on the sidelines going, you know, the whole what if moment. You know, and come the day when you can't attempt it, and you'll always have that sort of dying with the music inside you type situation.
Great point.
And
so true.
I think that's a worst case, 100 times worst case situation than doing it and going, ah, well, it's actually probably not my thing exactly, but hey, I went out crack, I did everything right.
Yeah.
And I got some incredible, as you did, incredible experience out of it and throughout the year with different things you did. So, you know, from my view, you know, obviously really proud of what you did, and as I said last podcast, you know, it was amazing effort, and inspired a lot of people. And I think sometimes your biggest learnings come from the ones that don't get the results you're really after.
100%.
But from there, so you've basically moved on from this 5-6 months ago now. You came back, and you're really sort of pursuing now, you're coming into the performance coaching world and really passing on your knowledge, and I think you've really sort of found your passion, as you were explaining to me.
Yeah, it's true. Well, I think it's funny, I think it's been a long time coming, and to be honest, I've probably been in the performance part of the world for a lot longer than what I've probably given myself credit for. I mean, I came out of school with a real passion for the subject, a real interest in it. I mean, for 10 more years, I've been interested in the mindset coaching and performance coaching, and just as an athlete myself, really interested in how to apply those strategies. So it's been something that I've been wrestling with for so long, and applying it and figuring out how it worked best for me, that I think at the back of my mind, I knew naturally I'd progress towards that, which showed through me working at the church and doing a lot of speaking and working with people over the last 4 years, helping people walk through the difficulties that they're facing in their own life at the moment. And I think as I was in Nepal, I had a lot of space and time to really be able to consider where to from here. Where is it that I want to actually put my passions into practice? Where is it that I think my greatest passion meets my greatest skill? And I think there's a lot of areas that link up with the performance coaching side of things and my ability. So it's been really exciting to make that a bigger focus and really start to apply you know, some of the lessons that I've been learning to the lives of others that I'm coming into touch with.
Yeah, it's cool, and that's why we've had you on a number of times now, which was obviously following your journey last year, but you know, you'll definitely be a regular going forward for this show as well. And I think obviously with your value, you fit right in with what we do here and what I do, and that's why our conversations are always, you know, we really enjoy, and hopefully other people do as well. Some cool concepts. I sort of actually want to get into some of your key values that you live by.
Yeah.
Do you have a set that you live by on a daily basis do you focus on?
Yeah, well, I think there's, to be honest, I've written down 31 key elements that I look at each morning that I want to be recognized as. I want to really just encompass throughout my daily work. I got 31. Okay. So each morning I'll sit down and just read through those, and they can vary from the way that I treat Jesse to the way that I love people to the food that I eat to how to be intentional at home. And there's a lot of values, but I think, honestly, my biggest passion, my greatest value is just to love people. I really want people to leave me feeling empowered. I want people to leave me feeling as though they've got more hope, they've got more ability. I'd love to be that guy who just draws out the talent that people might not see in himself. So I think that's probably one of my greatest and most significant values.
Talking about 31, because I'll be honest, that's a lot more than I've ever heard anyone have before. Yeah. Particularly in this sort of space.
Yeah.
Can you read them out the top of your head? Or probably
not 31. Not 31. I can go and get them if you want me to get them.
We might get them in a second. But yeah. I'm just more interested in about. So you read them every day, and these obviously help guide your sort of actions, I guess, for the day, and you sort of keep those in alignment. And I guess they help you make decisions.
Yes.
And choose things between what you do and don't do.
Yeah. So I don't think by any means that all 31 are as important as each other. There's some there that people would probably look at and go, oh, that's an interesting, it's very personalized to me. The reason I've done 31 is while I was in Nepal, I read Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Yep.
And he speaks about the value of having a mission statement for your life. But one thing that was really interesting for me was he gave a few examples of the different ways that people structure their mission statements for themselves. I'm a very dot point kind of person. I prefer specifics. I prefer it to be short, sharp, direct, just very clear than I do reading through a whole couple of pages worth of mission statement. So I thought rather than trying to write a couple of pages worth of mission statement for myself to read through, that I'll just dot point some things in my life that I'd really like to focus on, that I'd really like to improve. So I ended up writing a massive list and sort of just culling the ones that I didn't think were that essential. And I ended up with a list of about 100 things. And a lot of them I noticed sort of tied into other things. So I sort of arrowed one to here and arrowed another one to there and put them in categories. And then I realized that they all sort of broke down into about 31 different categories. Yeah. The ones that I got there, things that I would hate to get rid of in my character.
You know what? I reckon we need to get it.
I'll get it. Let me go get that.
I will entertain the audience with my voice for the next 10 seconds or so that he races inside to grab this 31 list. But I just think it'll be interesting to look at, and I just think listeners out there can have a think about their own. And I can discuss what my values are in comparison, because mine are a lot shorter list and the way I do mine. And then I guess people can gather from that what would work best for them. And I guess this is a good indication that you've got two people here that are performance coaching. I'm more on the team and leadership side of things, but Tice is obviously getting into the individual aspect, and just seeing that there are different options out there for people, no one size fits all type situation. So give us your 31, Tice. Yes. You're back now.
I'll read these out, and I think for those...
If you're okay reading them out.
100% okay. I think one of the most important things for people, especially those people who are listening to this that know me, is this is not me claiming to have these things together. This is me that as I go through it, I realize that it ebbs and flows. I'm aspiring to be this person. Yeah. So number one, now a lot of these aren't necessarily in particular order. Yep. These are just 31 things that I'd like
I can read them all out, and then we'll have a little discussion about them.
Number one, act with love. 2, tell those I love how I feel about them. 3, never compromise honesty. Seek counsel from others. Defend the absent. Be decisive, but do so politely. Seek to understand others. Think carefully before every purchase. Don't allow stress to have a place in my life. Be known for patience. Be known for positivity. Keep a sense of humor. Listen twice as much as I speak. That's one that those who know me know that I'm going to have to work on. Don't fear mistakes, but solve them creatively. Don't chase praise or fame. Start each day with a great routine. How's this? We were just talking about it. This is number 18. If I don't love it, don't commit to it. 19. Be flexible, not perfect. Continually ask what will make it better. 21. Begin with the end in mind. Speak confidently and kindly when asked questions. Act brave when I'm not. Choose my focus carefully. Rest each Sunday. Speak into people's potential. Be extremely generous. Be a faithful husband with eyes, mind, and body. Choose language carefully. Show interest in everyone. This one is a little bit of a fun one. This is just an intentional thing for me. don't use the internet at home. I'll schedule time to do it elsewhere, because I was spending so much time just getting caught up on internet. So now it's just a little bit tricky. I make myself go up to, you know, some cafe with Wi-Fi, enjoy the atmosphere, and I keep track during the week of what it is that I want to, you know, have a look at there, and I'll have a good look there.
Well, it's interesting, actually. No, I really love those, but I just want to go straight into the internet thing, which is interesting. Yep. We've just been away. We've been camping with a group of friends and partners and so forth for the weekend, and we're just discussing how cool it was to get away. Like, you couldn't get reception where we were. We're out at my family's property down by the creek there, and middle of nowhere, pretty much. And it's a cool feeling. Like, I think technology is just such a forefront in our lives now, and it's tricky because you and me, our businesses are based off online, based on social media, and very tricky. And just talk to me about some of the principles. Obviously, you don't use internet at home, so you have to leave to use the internet. Anything else, any other habits or rules, I guess, if you like, in place to help you minimalize or use more effective?
The reason that I came up with that, as I said, was because I was spending too much time just getting caught up. I'd you know, log on at home with the intention of checking something out that was going to benefit me, and I'd end up on Facebook looking at my mate's photos that has a great place, but just not at that particular point. So the whole idea there was just to be really deliberate about, and still create that space for yourself to be able to go and watch the, you know, the stupid videos that you like watching, or just surf a little bit mindlessly. But I just limit that to about 2 to 3 hours a week now. I do it on a Friday afternoon or a Saturday morning. And for me, that's all about just being intentional. So rather, what I do now is during the week, I'll allocate certain time. So during the days is time committed to me improving my coaching side of things, reaching out to schools, organising speaking engagements and things like that. So I'll spend time, you know, responding to emails, and I'll spend time working on my website and writing the blogs, which I'm writing. But I just don't let myself get too caught up in anything else. The funny thing is, I find this very hard, because we've got Wi-Fi at home, and this, I've got such a curious mind. I'm excited to hear about what people are up to. So I've caught myself a couple of times still sneaking on there. It's really difficult, which is something that sort of caught me by surprise, but that's what that looks like right now.
Well, something I've definitely wrestled with, and I don't think you're ever going to get it perfect, to be fair. I think it's going to be far from it every time, just like I mentioned, because we are so based online now, particularly with our livelihood, it is an interesting one. But it made me think from the weekend getting away for, you know, 2 or 3 nights.
How nice was it?
Just to get a break from it. You couldn't get your text messages, couldn't get your Facebook. And just letting things run, and, you know, the world could have been under attack and we wouldn't have known, sort of thing. So I think it's really important. It made me think that you need those time away. And I did like the other one too. You mentioned Sundays as a recovery day. It's definitely it's a tricky thing, balancing recovery, I think, with work. You know what I mean? Like, when you have a passion that's so strong and drive, you know, you drive so hard. To get that recovery balance, it's probably, again, I guess, something I'm sure listeners all have the same sort of situation. It's a challenge to sort of balance, isn't it? Because you do want to be successful in what you do, and do want to get better, and you do want to improve, and you know you got to put the work in. But at the same time, you've got to balance that with a recovery process, because, you know, it is a long... It's not just a marathon. It's an ultra marathon times 100, because I don't know any ultra marathon that goes for a lifetime.
It's so true. You just have to look around at the different sports of the world. You look at middle distance running, you realize that rest is a crucial component of so many training programs, and you hear me speak about coming back from Everest and the mental challenge that I went through there, and just the rest that I went through for a little while after. And I get that there's seasons, and I get that there's times to go hard, and I also really believe that there's a really essential lessons that's learned in those rest days. And I think for me, one of the nicest things is just to snap out of a routine for a day. On a Sunday, if I get up at 10 o'clock, that doesn't matter, I'm allowed to. If I get up at 6, it doesn't matter, I'm allowed to. I don't lock anything in for the day, and just sort of let it go as it sort of pleases. I think the great thing for me there, it reminds me that the world continues when I'm not doing my thing. You know, I'm not as massive as what I might like to think I am. I'm another part of a wheel, and that's not to underestimate the ability and the potential to think I can have to change people's lives, but it's just nice to, you know, realize my place in this big wheel. And I find by Monday morning, with that day just of cruising, I get back up just excited, because a lot of the time during that day I'm like, oh, I just want to go and jump on and do a little bit of work on my website. And it's almost putting that just shield in place to say, hey, you know what, you box that excitement, and tomorrow morning when, you know, you can unleash it, you're going to be excited to be able to do so. I find it benefits me in a lot of ways.
Yeah. No, I think that's really cool. And I think, again, it comes down to the individual and people finding out what works for them. And yeah. I thought that was interesting how you sort of just get up and let things flow. Do you don't have any structural plans? I know you have structure, but
yeah.
What do you mean by let it flow? Like, because I'm a believer in having a, you know, you've got to know what outcomes you want to get, yeah. Otherwise they're not going to happen for the day. What do you mean by that?
So I'm specifically speaking about my Sundays when I say
Sunday.
What, just my Sundays.
What about like your Tuesday? What do you mean? What do you do for a Tuesday in terms of structure? How do you work it out?
Like you, I'm a massive believer in morning routines. I'm a massive believer that they're just a great platform to be able to start the rest of your day. I've got a really strong morning routine that's very personalized to me. I've sort of played with a couple of different ideas and I found this works for me. So on a weekday, I get up at 5 a.m. First thing I do, I'll put on my running shoes or my yoga gear.
Yeah.
And I'll head out. Most of the time it's for a run. I'll head out.
Have you got the yoga pants?
not yet. That's going to be a new addition.
We love Joe Rogan.
Oh, my gosh.
What are the yoga pants, actually?
I'm not sure.
I'm in yoga, but are they just like comfy tracksuit pants with like elastic at the bottom?
Well, I'm not sure. I haven't seen many guys rocking the yoga pants. If I'm honest, I do it in my lounge room at 5 a.m. There's not much pants going on in my yoga studio. So
I have the... out.
It's been a few shocks for Jessie when she's come out some mornings to get a glass of water.
Well, the shock
thing.
When I stayed there, too.
it's so comfortable. When you know someone for 12 years.
Yeah, no, it was too comfortable. No, that didn't happen. No, it's interesting.
No one believes you.
Yeah. So you're up early, running in the dark. Yeah. What's after that?
So I'll get home and I'll come pretty much straight into... A run for me is automatically just getting that blood flow. I never come home from a run feeling worse than what I did beforehand.
Yeah.
I'll come home just... get straight into 20 minutes worth of meditation. And I think you can tell by the way I speak, my mind works in a really, really quick way. So meditation's a great opportunity for me just to be able to sit back and realize my thoughts don't dominate my action, that I can sort of not allow my thoughts to control my day. In fact, I can see them more as a movie screen rather than actually a guide pointing me to exactly where I need to go. So I'll use that. It just helps me calm down and just really gather myself before I get into my next activity, which I like to go into with a calm mind, and that's clarifying my day's three top priorities.
Ah, there it is, yep.
I love the idea of, and I think I learned this from Tim Ferriss, pointed me in the direction of this podcast, and he speaks about, establishing your top three priorities, because for so long I'd go to work and come home, and I'd always feel unfulfilled. I'm like, crap, I probably could have done more, I could have done a little bit more here and focused a bit more there, and I think of just clarifying those three priorities for me allows me to know where to direct my focus. So I'll list that. So when I come home that night, if I've ticked those three jobs off, well done, Tice. I don't stress myself about anything else that could have, should have, maybe got done.
And if you don't?
If I don't get those jobs done, well, I'll always usually set those jobs in a way that I know, unless something crazy happens, they're going to be achievable.
Yeah.
Whether that's a step in the right direction of having that complete or whether that's actually completing it. So if I don't, I'll just follow up the next day.
Can I just jump in here? I have the same sort of routine. And there's definitely times where you do set too big a task without realising. Yeah. Like you think, oh, this may be a website page here or there or something.
Yeah.
And you don't realise that it's 6 hours worth of work rather than the two you thought it might be.
Yes.
So just in terms of setting out those three, is it just a specific, do you have a really good think about what sort of time you need per task? Or how do you do that?
Yeah, well, I'm a big believer in the fact that our culture is just so caught up on this thing of productivity. Like, I love the idea of getting stuff done, but I also think when you've got really clearly defined values, which for me is my faith, my family, my health, my coaching, and adventure, you know where to prioritize your time. So I feel like since I established that in my life, I don't get as caught up with like the overabundance of stuff that might need to get done. So I personally never feel as though I'm overwhelmed by the amount that I set myself. I just feel like just establishing those three is always within my reach.
Okay, so you always sort of keep it, like you probably keep it on the reachable side rather than the stretching side.
Yeah.
Because probably the reachable side is still going to be a stretch to get to.
So, it's so true.
It's a good thing. And it's definitely something I think about too, because I do sort of similar process of setting three key tasks for the day.
Yeah.
But I do notice sometimes I do set too big a task.
Yes.
I have a 2-hour block when really it needs to be a 4-hour block.
Yeah.
For do something.
And that's so true. You were actually speaking to me about this the other day, and so much of the stuff that we do set for ourselves takes longer than we did anticipate it for. Yeah. And I think that really rung true to me, because how true is it? We'll set ourselves a 2-hour job, which we're like, crap, it actually takes 5. So I think the beauty of having 2 or 3 things on your list, that rather than having that within 9 things on your list, you're not stressed out about the other 8 you didn't get done.
Golden rule, I think. I learned off a guest, Brenton Ford, who was episode 28.
Yeah.
Whatever, when you set yourself a task we'll stay with business here. When business... It usually takes double the amount of time that you think it's going to take and double the cost.
Yeah.
I think that it's not a bad way to look at it. And if it goes under that, then great.
Well done.
You're on the better side of it. But I think if you think something's going to take 1 day, it's usually 2 days.
Yeah.
You think something's going to cost $1,000, it's usually $2,000. You know, yeah. I think it's a good place to be. I think we naturally have this optimistic side of things. And I think if you can run by that rule, I think it's not a bad thing, especially time-wise, because I'm a corporate. I've definitely, I can do this, and this in an afternoon, and really, you're looking at 2 days' work there.
Yeah, so true.
So it's a cool place to be.
Yeah.
I just want to go back to, you had a summer off, basically. You had the summer going up the coast and doing a few things. I sort of want to talk commercially how people can do this, because I'd say 9 out of 10 people probably would have got back from Everest trip, back taking a month off, would have had to dive straight back into their 40-hour week roles. What are your thoughts on how do you do this commercially in terms of finance, in terms of getting this done? Yeah. Like, I know you're married and stuff, but like, what's your advice to people out there? Because that's the big driver. Most people, you and me included too, like, you're all got this finance thing to fund these things.
Yes.
And it would be lovely for everyone to take 3 months off a year or whatever, but some people you just don't have that. You have credit card bill, Give me some of your key thoughts on finance and what you've been reading about lately and how you're living your life.
Yeah, well, I think I've been, and you've been around me for the last few days, and there's one particular group of people that I just can't stop raving about enough at the moment. These two guys based in the US, the minimalists. Highly, highly recommend that all your listeners go to their website. They write a blog, and these guys are just a massive breath of fresh air, I find.
From the States, are they?
From the States, yeah. So the reason I find them such a breath of fresh air is because, as you mentioned, you know, so many of us, we're weighed down with credit card debt or debt in general. And we're all in this rat race, whether, you know, we like to really acknowledge it or not. I think our culture really values status and, you know, it doesn't have to be a BMW, but driving a nice car that you took out a loan for, which is fine, or buying a house that you might not be able to afford, buying clothes that you might not need and eating out more than you really. I think these guys are a breath of fresh air because they just offer some really practical ways to minimize your costs and live a life of more purpose. Their little motto is a life with less stuff with more purpose, and I think the reason that just hits so truly to me, because I found myself, you know, 6 months ago I would a new style would come out, a new pair of pants, a new shirt, a new jumper, a new pair of shoes, or my shoes were just a little bit old, and I'd be like, oh man, I don't want to look as though I'm outdated, I want to stay relevant, I want to I want people to see me and see that I'm, you know, I really know what's going on. And with that said, just so much of our pay was just going nowhere, you know. We'd save a little bit, but majority of it was just going towards protecting this image that we were trying to portray. And I think these guys are really worth checking out because they just speak some really helpful, practical, simple tools into, you know, lives like what I just explained I was like.
Yeah, it is interesting. And it's a whole nother conversation, I guess, about, you know, what we get sold to believe you need to have to be happy and all these type of things. And it's a definitely individual type of thing, I guess, choice you make. And what sort of springs to mind for me to get sort of, you know, that key word, I don't really like using, but that financially free type word kind of pisses me off in a way. But it pisses me off in a way because I think a lot of people use it to use it to their own benefit, I guess, and getting other people to enroll in certain programs, so forth. But I just think it's when you have a more minimal lifestyle, or to the moral point, the amount of money that you can actually live off per week in a really happy way, it's a lot easier to get to that point where you don't have to work as much to fund your lifestyle. Yeah. And if you don't have to fund a huge lifestyle, I think it's a lot more achievable. Like, you know, instead of having to break a world record for, you know, you can live a great lifestyle running your local running races rather than have to try and make it to the Olympics.
Yeah.
And making it to the Olympics is a lot harder than to win a local running race.
Yeah.
And by that I mean to fund a cheaper lifestyle, it's a lot easier than to fund a lifestyle that involves mansions and Porsches and holiday houses and overseas trips to Aspen and so forth. So it's, it's an interesting thing. And I think it's definitely a thing you and me are both sort of reevaluating, I guess, if you like.
Yeah.
We talk a lot about it and find that balance. And maybe the balance is going to change over time.
Yeah.
Like, neither of us have kids yet. No. And maybe that will change in future. But I think for now, we're both, you know, quite minimalist, I guess, both of us in a way.
I think one of the coolest things that I didn't mention that give these guys a really valuable platform is their whole journey started in the corporate world, where one of the guys, Joshua, he said he was earning $200,000 a year over in the States. He was earning $200,000 a year, but he was spending $220,000 a year, so he still found himself in debt. He said, so if people would hear about how much I earn, assume I'm rich. He goes, but I'm still paying off credit card. He goes, so really I was poor. And he said that this lifestyle for him was just not working anymore. So he climbed his way out of that $200,000 worth of debt, and he just couldn't believe the freedom that he felt from that. So he's got this personal philosophy that he's never going to let himself go into debt if he can help it again. And it just, I thought the fact that he came from a corporate world where a lot of us are, or a world where we're sort of spending it probably more than we can really afford. I know I was in that category for a long time. He just comes from a voice of guidance rather than as an authoritarian. He understands where it is that we're at and the struggles and the difficulties of being where we are. And he says, hey, but this is the strategies that I've adopted that got me out of debt in this amount of time. But you can do the same if you follow a few of these steps, apply it to your own life. And they've had some great results. They've got quite a big following now. I think they've got 150,000 people who are right on board with them on Facebook. And just some of the stories that they share through their podcast as well, their listeners calling in and just sharing about the freedom they found in their own life through applying their strategies, really encouraging.
Yeah, it is interesting. Like, it's the whole debt thing. Like, I'm not a huge believer in having no debt, because I think there is a good debt in terms of buying a business that produces money. For instance, or even if you want to look at a house, if you buy a house for X amount of dollars and your repayments are X amount of dollars and you're renting it out for more than that X, then you're actually producing an asset that's producing money. So therefore, you're actually making money from that debt. But then in the other way around, if you're buying something that isn't meeting those or going beyond that, then you get yourself a liability.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of Richard Kiyosaki on this, and I guess it depends on what sort of, you know, where you want to get to. And maybe if, like, saving cash, for instance, like he talked about, like, buying a car. Like, a car came online, he wanted to buy a Porsche. Like, it's his passion, he loved it. And the Porsche knew that he would love this car, so they rang him up and they said, Robert, I've got this car in, I know you're going to love.
Yeah.
And come in, he loved the car, right? And it was expensive. I think it was $100,000 or more.
Yeah.
And what he did instead of paying for that in cash and having no debt, he financed the car.
Yeah.
Financed the car. But what he did with that, he had $100,000. So he had $100,000, went out and bought, I think it might have been a storage business or something like that. Storage space, or one of those sorts of another business space, I can't remember what it was. And that threw off and off cash, and what I mean, it produced the money that business was making, paid for his repayments.
Mm.
So in the end, he paid off his car from that business, and what he had was a business that kept going and producing money, rather than after, say, 5 years, he paid off the car.
Yeah.
So in 5 years, he had a business that was producing money still. He had a car paid off.
Yes.
And for the next 5 years, he's going to make money.
Yeah.
Or he could have just gone and bought out that car. Yeah. As we know, cars is a complete liability.
Mm.
5 years from now, he had a car that depreciated down from 100 grand to 50 grand.
Yeah.
And so he lost 50 grand. But he did it the other way around. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think there is different ways of going about it. And obviously these minimalist guys have definitely, you know, found a way that worked for them and maybe funded their lifestyle.
Yeah.
But I think, and that's what, you know, we're really interested in finding what suits, I guess, individual needs and where you're at.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing they're big on as well. They say, hey, this worked for us.
Mm.
And they're very clear on that. They're not going to say, hey, well, if you're going to try and open a business, well, this is the exact way to do it. They'll definitely offer the advice they think that serves them, as we all do, I guess. Mm. But yeah, definitely worth checking out. I recommend just jumping on board, having a look through them. They've definitely opened my eyes to a lot of things that I've really new to. Yeah, for me personally, offered so much value to the way I live out my life.
Yeah, no, I think that'll be definitely something we should definitely check out. I've got some more rapid fire questions here for you that we might get stuck into.
Yes.
Mentors in your life right now, and maybe even some mentors you had in the past.
Yeah. There's one guy that rings so true to my mind, being a member of City Life Church in Melbourne, Godwin Shim, one of the pastors down there, amazing guy. He's about 35 years old, but you know those people you come past and they're just, you look at the way they operate and there's just so much truth in the way they live about what it is that they believe. And this guy is, it seems to be my way of explaining the people that I really respect. He's another breath of fresh air. He's just, he really, literally practices what he preaches. One of the most humble guys, one of the most wise guys I've ever met in terms of lifestyle advice. I'll go to him so much and just ask him questions about, you know, marriage, relationships and things like that. And the stuff you walk away with is just incredible. So I think on a real personal side, he's the go-to man for me, guy that I just really, really just respect and love being around. But I was saying earlier that I just don't really have a lot of face-to-face mentors as such, and this is something that I'm happy to be challenged on and I'm happy to be sort of instructed otherwise. But I think with the access that we have to, you know, places like YouTube and the blogs that are going around, just the access that we have to the some of the most renowned performance coaches or whoever it may be, we got access to them just over YouTube, and I know so much of the stuff that we learned through them is stuff that you pay a lot of cash to get from them at their events. And I personally find so much value and would almost consider a mentor via distance, Tony Robbins.
Yep.
I watch so much of his stuff. I've, you know, two of his books are, you know, they're two of about 10 books that I still own, hard copy. I go through it. It's just so many highlights. I'll go through every couple of weeks and just read another chapter. And it's just, it's like a real handbook to my life. I think so many of the questions that I personally would think to ask, he answers through his work. Another guy, we actually went and saw him together in Melbourne a couple of months ago, Rob Bell.
Yeah.
Rob Bell, the reason I respect him so much, he's coming from a church background. He's sort of stepped out of the norm of how church has operated for the last couple of centuries. And he's copped some flack for it. He's copped some real criticism. But one of the amazing things is there's just so much freedom that comes through his message. And he's a guy that I just love because he just, like Godwin, he just seems to embody the message that he preaches. And I think anyone who lives out what it is they believe in just has so much more power than someone who just does the preaching.
Yeah,
they're probably three guys that really stand out to me.
Yeah, no.
And Elizabeth Gilbert, finally.
Who's she?
So she's the author of Eat, Pray, Love.
I've heard of that.
She's a close friend of Rob Bell. I actually heard of her through Rob Bell's podcast.
Yep.
Elizabeth Gilbert actually just wrote a book called Big Magic, and it was directed at the world of creatives and the struggles, the trials that we go through when we're trying to establish ourselves in whatever it may be. And she's just incredible. Oh my gosh, you're going to have your mind just blown. Get into a little bit of her stuff, because the way she thinks is just different. It's just amazing. So she'd be the fourth.
Yeah, no, a couple there particularly I really, obviously Tony, big fan of.
Yes.
Geez, he's like, I guess there's a few before him, maybe Jim Rohn and a couple other guys like that, but he just continually keeps going. I think that he's sustained peak performance for himself. Like, I know he coaches it, but like,
practicing what he preaches.
He's on top of his game still. He still will listen to him. Incredible. He still watches shows he gets to do and does. And his new book, I've been, you know, looking through that, which is cool. And yeah, he produces just such high quality work, and I think he's inspiration to so many in our industry, and I think people across the world are better for him.
Yeah.
And Rob Bell's another that I've listened to a lot. Not a lot, I'd say a fair bit.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of his, and obviously we saw him live in Melbourne here a month or two ago, and He's an, I think, an exceptional, and like you said, Mancinelli, he's a breath of fresh air in his space. I think for 2016, for some of the principles and things he preaches about, I think there's not a better person to be leading that charge. And, you know, hopefully one day I'll sit across the table from him on this podcast because I think he'd fit in nicely with what we do here. And
let me sit up the other end of that table for the conversation because I just love the issue.
Exactly right. Yeah. So, no, he's a star. So, no, and I haven't had much to do with the other ones. But, you know, I love that. When you think of a great leader, who do you think of? Who comes to mind?
Oh, man, there's so many people that probably come to mind. I mean, on a personal experience level, I think the pastor of City Life Church, where I've spent the last 6 years, Mark Connor, he's just an incredible guy. So we've got a church of about 8,000, 10,000 people. So many different opinions, so many different mindsets, so many different ideas on where it is that we should be going. And he just has this incredible capacity to be able to... He's just not tossed around by emotion. He's such a... He just seems so stable. He's very open to hearing the ideas of those who want to speak to him. And I think one of the things that you get caught up in any industry, but especially the church, is you go to a church and they say, hey, we've got the right message. This is the exact way that things are supposed to go. You go to another one, they say the exact thing. Great thing about Mark is you go, you know what? Like, every voice has something powerful in it, you know? He always does the comparison to what people preach as, he goes, think of it like eating a fish. He goes, when you eat a fish, you sit down and you eat the meat. He goes, but every now and then you'll get a bone and you just split that aside. He goes, it doesn't mean it's a good fish because it's got a bone in it. It doesn't mean the whole fish is bad just because of the bone. It just means that that particular part isn't something that you really want to buy into. And he really does a great job of living out and leading our church, this organization, with that principle. He's very open to hearing the meat from other bits and pieces, other churches, but he'll never get caught up on their bones and just, you know, close off his ears to what they've got to say because of a couple of things he disagrees with. And that's something that I've applied to all people. I mean, just because I sit across from someone at a dinner table from time to time and they might say something I disagree with, doesn't mean that everything they say is not valuable. It just means that particular thing. And I've found so much value in that. In fact, he's probably one of the best leaders I've ever encountered personally.
Great team. What's a great team that comes to mind for you? Could be business, could be sport, could be... political. What's a great team? Could be anything.
I was a part of Box Hill Hawks for a pre-season 2013, 2014, I think, and I experienced what I really believe is a great team. Now, that's backed up by the results. I mean, they went on to, they played in the grand final the year that I left them. They won the grand final the year before I got there, and I was only there for a pre-season, but these guys had an amazing ability just to be able to connect. I mean, there's so many different personalities and there's a lot of ego from time to time in football, but their culture didn't allow ego. It didn't allow any individual to get too caught up on their own merit. They just really had this capacity to be able to implement this idea as they're a unit. They're all in this together. And if there's a few highlights or if there's a few stars from time to time, well, thanks, you've contributed to the team, but no one was allowed to, you know, get taken away with. I went there with an awesome capacity to run. I was dominating the time trials and stuff that we did. It would have been easy in those moments for me to walk around with a bit of a strut, but they said, okay, Tyce, this is fantastic. That's a great attribute, but now it's time to work on your kicking and your game understanding and really just acknowledging people's strengths, guiding them where they're weak and just putting all that together to make a unit. I think they didn't, or those principles in any team, I guess, are effective. But personal experience, that was big for me.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's definitely a good answer. Got some more. I like these quick fire questions.
Yeah,
this
is good.
I want to get you keep answering them. Advice for your 25-year-old self. So we'll go back about 4 years.
Yeah. Read more. I think that's one thing that until the last... You know, I'm saying 3 years. This is a year after this thing cuts off. But I think it really was about the time that I was around 20, about 26. I just started to see the benefit that reading had in my own life. And it's amazing how many of the problems that I face are solved just through reading people who have already been there. So I think that would be a huge thing for me. Actually, all the way up from probably 10 years old, that rule would have applied.
Perfect. Books and documentaries you might recommend you've been reading lately that people should get a hold of, or any documentaries or movies people should listen and watch?
Yeah, well, I actually, I've just finished a book called The War of Art. It's a little bit of a play on the words of the original, The Art of War, but The War of Art speaks about this resistance that we as creatives, regardless of what industry it is that we're in, it talks about the resistance that we face and the struggles that we're also aware of that can really stop us from performing at our best. I would highly recommend this book because so much of the stuff that was spoken about rang true for me. It's funny, actually, Rob Bell's a big ambassador for this book, which is what got me onto it. That's probably the biggest highlight to me at the moment. Actually, Richard Rohr, he's probably another guy. Look him up. He'd probably fit in the successful people category, in my opinion. I'm starting to reread, just last night, starting to reread his book called Simplicity.
Yeah.
It seems to be a real mantra in my life at the moment. And the risk of just repeating myself again, speaking of breath of fresh air, that book's a breath of fresh air, especially in the world of faith and spirituality with so many mindsets and opinions. I think he just brings real clarity into the subject. So they're probably two books that really stand out to me right now.
And any documentaries or movies you reckon people should... You just thought was worth a watch and you got a bit out of?
The documentary that really stands out to me at the moment, Cowspiracy. We've spoken about this quite a bit ourselves. I'll let you just look into that. It speaks about the meat industry and just the way that that's sort of being handled and the effects that it has on, you know, our environment and things like that. I think that's really interesting. The Minimalists, they're actually just releasing a documentary at the moment, which you could probably find on their website, so jump on there and check that out. They're probably two documentaries that right now really stand out to me. I'm trying to think of another one that I watched the other day that was just a real eye-opener. I think it's called Beyond the Edge or Over the Edge. I can't remember. It was on Netflix, and it looks a really amazingly well-done documentary on Edmund Hillary's attempt to summit Everest. It's combined with real footage and a little bit of acting just to, oh my gosh, speaking about just overcoming challenges and just getting encouragement to do what hasn't been done before, check that out. I'll let you know at the end of this so you can put it in show notes, but it's an awesome documentary.
Yeah, we'll definitely hook that up on the show notes on the web for sure. If I gave you a banner and you could put anything on it, write anything on it and place it anywhere in the world, where would it be and what would it say?
I think we've spoken about this before, and I can't remember who it was that said it, but for something like this, I think my mantra probably would change from time to time. I would put it in...
Free coffee, next day.
Who's that, Seth Godin on Tim Ferriss's? I would put it... I'm just trying to think of a really busy place. I'm going a big, neon, bright one right in the middle of Times Square. Probably say, get back up.
Love it. We're sort of coming, just final couple of questions here, mate.
Yes.
First off, people will reach you, find you. Obviously, I've got notes on my page.
Yeah.
Where do people get a hold of you? Best place to reach you?
Yep, just tysonpopplestone.com. Perfect. Absolutely everything you need there.
Done. And what are you grateful for in your life right now?
I genuinely believe I'm probably married to the best woman on the planet, one of the most supportive women I've ever met, just an incredible grounded person that I, after nearly 8 years of being together, still get excited to be around, still am inspired by, still really look up to and just feel so encouraged by.
Love it, mate. Well, I think that's a great place to end it up. I really want to acknowledge you again coming on the show. You're a regular.
I like it. Definitely. I want to be a regular.
Definitely set the tone for this show in terms of coming on multiple times and really sharing your recent goals, aspirations and knowledge to all listeners across the globe here. So thank you very much. I look forward to next time and getting you on again and we'll catch up again. Now, you're heading overseas, I believe, mid-year.
Yeah,
so
July 3rd.
Maybe we'll have to do a podcast overseas at some point.
Oh, I would love to.
Yeah,
I might love to try that.
And hook up a cafe, maybe in Paris or something.
Yeah, fantastic. That sounds good.
We'll put that out there for the audience to remind me of, and I'll try and get that done over the next... Because you're going for about 2 years, is
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
That'd be cool, man. So we're going to definitely have to do something over there. So yeah, I really want to know what you're coming on, man, and doing your stuff, bringing the heat.
I like it.
I'm sure people love it and get a lot out of it, and I'm really excited that you're getting into the coaching world. I know you've been in the space for a while and looking forward to some big things over these coming years. That's really exciting. So guys, I hope you really enjoyed that. We're going to wrap that up there, and we'll have to catch up again soon for sure.
Hey, thanks for having me again, man. It's been good fun.
Cheers.
There you have it, folks. Episode 51 with my man Tyson Popplestone. You know, super to have him on. We've known each other for such a long time, and just his messages are really beneficial to so many people, and that's why I get him back. And you know, really looking forward to him going into the future and doing his thing. We'll definitely have to get him back on, and I hope you really enjoy that. And make sure you message me to let me know that you're enjoying his episodes. Otherwise, he might not get a gig. But if you do love that, let me know. I'd love to hear your feedback and how this one went down for you, whether it be Facebook, Elite Team Leadership, same goes for Instagram, and Twitter handle is Jock Motivation. So jump on there, guys, and check that out. Let me know. And for this one, guys, again, remember your mission for this week is to tell a friend. No matter where you are on the globe, guys, tell a friend about this podcast, about Tyson, about what we do here. That really helps us out and helps your friend out, more importantly, with all the great advice and tips and strategies for them. Show notes, Elite teamleadership.com.au/EP51. So that's it, guys. Really stoked. Next week, got a huge guest, huge following. She's going to be super. And following that, we have some other really ones that have been exciting to release for a few months now and working on and got them done, guys. So they are going to be absolute beauties. So keep an eye for those ones. Have a massive week. Get stuck in. Love to hear about your progress. Don't be afraid to send us a message here, and we'll get back to you. So enjoy and speak to you soon.